Lord, that unpacks, Lord, your breakthrough into darkness, Lord, and hope for nations, and ultimately Jesus born. Amen.
Amen. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to see you all. Let me just find Ruth. So we are going to be looking at Ruth chapter 2 this morning. Is the microphone okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm not used to wearing one of these. And to start with, I think it would be really good if we actually read the chapter, otherwise you won't have any idea what I'm going on about. So it's Ruth chapter 2. It's quite long, but we're going to read the whole thing. So, now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does this young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is a Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in any other field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother, your homeland, and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You've put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she'd gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Father, I just ask that as we look at this chapter in more detail, that you would be speaking to us through your word. Father, that you would just drop into our hearts what you want us to hear this morning about who you are and your love for us. Amen. So, there's such a wealth of things that I could talk to you about from this chapter. In fact, in the couple of weeks leading up to this, I've had so many thoughts that actually narrowing it down and getting it into some form that I could deliver to you didn't happen until yesterday. But there was one thing I kept coming back to time and time again, and that is the love, care, and kindness of God the Father. In verse 12, Boaz says to Ruth, "May you find refuge under the wings of God." This is Boaz's blessing over Ruth, and the picture is of a young eaglet finding protection and shelter under the wings of their parent. Wings that are broad and cover completely. It's a picture that speaks of provision and protection. And I want us to see exactly how Ruth finds this refuge through the circumstances she finds herself in and the person, Boaz, she meets along the way. I want for us to grasp that as God shows incredible love, care, and compassion towards Ruth and Naomi, as Ruth finds her refuge under the wings of God, so he does the same for us, providing for us in the ordinary everyday of our lives, often working almost imperceptibly through circumstances we find ourselves in, practically providing for us and revealing his nature to us through the people he's put around us. So before we look at the chapter, I want to tell you a story from my own life about how he's revealed his love, care, and kindness towards me and provided for me through a seemingly ordinary event. So it was the end of my second year at university, and me and my friends had decided to go to an acoustic night together. I'd never been to one before. I was quite looking forward to it. And then one by one, all of my friends decided they were too tired to go and were going to stay at home. Great. I'll go on my own. I can be quite stubborn. I thought I'll go on my own. So I went, and I sat down on a sofa next to a girl I'd never met before, who happened to be in the same college that I was, just the year below me. We talked all evening, and we've been friends ever since. Now that doesn't seem like an amazing story. It's lovely, but it's not particularly amazing. It was an ordinary day, an ordinary evening. I made a friend. But there are a few things about me 8 years ago that I haven't told you which make this story extraordinary. The first is that historically, I don't deal with well with changes to plans. Ask Peter. He's had a lot of years of making me more spontaneous. So my friends backing out on me at the last minute would normally have sent me into a panic, and I would have refused to go and stayed at home. So the fact that I actually went is pretty remarkable. Also, I'm quite shy, and I'm not very confident with people that I don't know well. I tend to clam up, don't know what to say, and can't hold a conversation for more than 4 minutes. Again, that's the reason I married Peter. He's much better at it than I am. But not only did I sit next to someone I didn't know, but I talked to her for the whole evening. The conversation flowed and hasn't stopped in the 8 years since. So yes, on the surface, it looked like an ordinary day, an ordinary evening, and I made a friend. But this friendship has brought us both such life. It's rare for me to connect that quickly with somebody where I'm happy to share the deepest things about myself. The thing is, God knew that at that time I was coming out of one of the loneliest seasons of my life, and I desperately needed a friend like that. Now, the friends I had and who I was going to the acoustic night with were and are lovely, but we hadn't reached that point of the depth of relationship that I needed. And it was only in looking back on the event that I could see that God had worked it all together so that I could meet Katie and so that I could have this friendship. And it's exactly what he does in Ruth chapter 2. He works subtly through circumstances and his people to reveal his heart towards her and to provide for Ruth and Naomi in ways they couldn't have expected and didn't even realize until after the fact. So my first point is that Ruth finds refuge under the wings of God as he provides through and despite the circumstances her and Naomi find themselves in. So Ruth and Naomi are poor. In verse 1, it says that Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. But this is clearly not a connection that Naomi has drawn on, because in the very next verse, Ruth asks her if she can go into the fields and glean. Gleaning is a practice under Israelite law, reserved for the poor and the foreigners, so that they could gather enough food for themselves that they wouldn't have been able to purchase otherwise. The fact that Ruth asks Naomi if she can go and glean lets us know that they are poor and that they have no one to provide for them and they need food. But in order to understand quite how desperate Ruth and Naomi's situation is, we need to understand something of the culture they were living in. Theirs is a culture where community and family are everything. Where family honour is really important. Where you're honoured for your social worth and value in the community, and you experience shame when the community think badly of you and you become disconnected from the group. Now, last week, you'd have heard how Naomi left Israel with her husband and sons to seek out a better life for themselves in a foreign land. Not only is this something that God has clearly told the Israelites not to do, but in doing it, Naomi has also left her community behind. And now she's returned in a worse position than when she left, because her husband and her sons have died. In telling her community that God has afflicted her, and in instructing them to call her Mara, which means bitter, she is declaring to them that God has judged her, and the choice to move away from Israel, and therefore she is shamed. She wouldn't have expected her community to help her, and she wouldn't have felt like she could approach her immediate family for help, because a person shamed is a person excluded. There may be food in Bethlehem, but she and Ruth have no male relative to provide for her. They have no power, they have no prestige. They're helpless, they're vulnerable. And I'm pretty sure that without the provision in the law that God had made, so they could go and get food, they would have been in dire circumstances and might even have starved. So Ruth asks Naomi if she can go and glean, and Naomi says yes. So far, so ordinary. And landowners would have known the law, so they would have opened their fields to the poor and the foreigner. There wasn't a limited choice of fields where Ruth could go and glean. But where does she end up? In verse 3, I love the phrasing of it, because it says, "As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech." As if it was just coincidence. And that should prick our God antennae straight away. Because on the surface, it looks like an ordinary day of gleaning. Ruth is going about her everyday life, keeping her promise to Naomi, trying to provide for their basic needs. But this is no random field, and it is no coincidence. It's here we begin to see God at work in Ruth's life, because she finds herself in a field that belongs to a relative of Naomi, a relative that Naomi has chosen not to ask for help. It's as though God has said to himself, "Okay, you won't ask your family for help. I'll do it for you. I'll put you in a position where they have to help you, even though you haven't asked for it." God clearly doesn't see Naomi the way she sees herself. She thinks he's judging her, but he's not. He wants to provide for her. So how kind is Father God? He didn't speak to her in an audible voice. He didn't speak to Ruth in an audible voice, telling her which field to glean in. Just like he didn't tell me to go to the acoustic night on my own, or to sit on a particular sofa, or that I was going to make one of my best friends. But he led her there. And Ruth, we can be pretty certain, has no clue who Boaz is at all. But God has seen the shame Naomi's living under. He's seen that she won't ask her family for help. And he sees that she thinks he's pouring his judgment on her. He sees all of that. And in his compassion towards them, he leads Ruth to Boaz's field. And the result of that, as we shall see, is beyond anything they could have expected or imagined. And God sees the way we feel about ourselves. He sees the way we view ourselves. He sees that we don't think we're worthy of his help. But rather than heaping condemnation on us for the mistakes that we've made, he uses circumstances and he puts us in positions where we will experience his provision and care over our lives, where we find refuge under his wings, just as he did for me in Durham. So I have a few questions at this point. Where has he done that in your life? Where have you found yourself that you never expected to be, as if by accident? And it's only in looking back that you realize that God was with you all along. Some of you might find it quite easy to pinpoint those moments. Some of you might find it harder. And that's okay, but it doesn't mean that God isn't working in your circumstances. Often we need to practice recognizing God's hand in the everyday, ordinary circumstances of our lives. Because as we've seen, God does work subtly in ways that aren't immediately obvious. So let's have our eyes open to see what he's doing, even when it's not supernatural or seemingly extraordinary. And at this point, I want to invite Tommy up to give something of her story of moving to this country, and how God provided it for her in a culture that wasn't her own, just as we've started to see he does for Ruth.
Okay, all right then. Okay, yeah. Right, so my name is Tomilayo, and I'm a nurse. I work at Kettering General Hospital. I'll be just sharing very, very briefly about my story of how I moved into this country. I'll start by saying that I think one of the bravest things I think that I've done in the past is deciding to move from my very, very comfortable zone to places that are not very comfortable, or let's say moving from the very, very certain environments where I'm very familiar with my friends and family and loved ones, and just deciding to just move. I think for me that's the bravest thing, really. I completed my studies. I went to School of Nursing in Nigeria. And that was in 2012. And I got a job. I worked for about 2 years. And after 2 years, I said to myself, oh, I'm bored. I was bored of the routine. I wanted something different. I wanted something very, very challenging. So I decided to pray about it. And So I prayed about it, and I ran very randomly. I ran into a friend of mine who said to me, did you know you could actually go for a degree? You could do a degree in the UK, because if I wanted to go do a degree in Nigeria, I would have probably spent another 5 years doing what I wanted to do. But in the UK, it was just a year. I could do it in a year. And she said to me, oh, you could do it in a year instead of 5 years. I'm like, okay. I've not really thought about that. I will have a think. So I thought about that, and I prayed as well. I later found out that it's probably a very expensive move, and it wasn't cheap. And initially, when I got the offer from the university saying, you've got an unconditional offer, do you? And I look at the letter, I look at the money, and I said, phew. So I remember spending time and just praying that, God, if you really want me to do this, if you really want me to go for this, to study, I need you to provide for me, because there was no way I was going to get the money. But God provided, and my parents said to me, oh yeah, we can sponsor you, and I was excited. I was really happy, because that was what I wanted to do. But I think the only thing I was really thinking about at that point is just the excitement of going for my degree, all the very, very tiny details of, will I meet friends over there? What about the culture? What about the weather? I didn't think about all of that. I wasn't thinking about all of that. So in 2014, I jumped on the plane and I landed in Birmingham International Airport. And I got there and I was just standing there and I was like, okay, right. So in Nigeria, we only have two seasons. We have a raining season and a dry season. If it's dry, it is totally dry. If it's raining, it is raining. There's no middle ground. So for the first few months, I just couldn't get my head around, why is it sunny outside and I'm still cold? I'm like, I don't get it. I'm like, why is it so sunny? And when I have to have my layers on, I just couldn't get my head around that. I'm like, okay. But those are the challenges I had to deal with. I had to get used to the weather. I had to get with the cold, got used to the very, very different culture. And I had to get used to the UK educational system. And the education system, it's quite different from what I was used to. I spent the first 24 years of my life in Nigeria, and it was just totally different. And I had to get used to everything. I had to learn and unlearn. And it was quite difficult. And because I kind of feel my study was like an investment for me. It was a lot of money. I made up my mind, I'm gonna try and make it worth it. So I had to study. I had to study in the cold. I had to study. It was quite difficult. And I think at some point I started having panic attacks. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll be shaking. I was very anxious. I was very worried. And it was telling on me. My parents would ring me, thank God for WhatsApp, thank God for Facebook Messenger. I could connect with my parents. I'm like, what's wrong with you? And I knew I wasn't happy, because at some point I just felt, God, is it? Did you actually get me a nod to come here? Is this? And I was not happy. I was down and I wasn't happy at all. But I knew I just had to carry on. And that's one very hard part of it, where, you know, I'm not happy, but I just have to carry on. But I think reflecting back now, just like Ruth said about reflection, I think God had a hand, and God had a hand in every step and in every move. I think it's very easy to see the hand of God in retrospect. It's quite easy. But I think when you are in there, you just can't see it. Be like, I can't see God's hands in it. But I think in retrospect now, I think God had a hand. God was with me, even when I did not feel it. And when I landed in Birmingham International Airport, I was very blessed with a very lovely family, an Nigerian family, who got to know I was coming to the UK. They offered to pick me up from the airport. And I was with them from that day for about two and a half years. They provided accommodation for me. They provided shelter for me. They provided food. And I planned to just probably stay in their spare room for about a month and then get accommodation at the university. But they were like, no, we have got a spare room. Why do you want to move out? And they were like parents to me. They were like family away from families. They are fantastic people, and they're still here up to now. They still call me to check on me. How are you doing? And I think for that, I think I'm blessed. I know friends who had to struggle with paying rent and all of that. And at that point, I just couldn't relate with that. I was like, okay, I couldn't relate with all of that because I was just blessed with having that support from that family. And talking about the schooling as well, I had a fantastic at my program manager who she's been to Nigeria a couple of times. She does a lot of international trips, and she could relate with the plight of a Nigerian student like me who had to like start from the scratch. And they were fantastic people. And I completed my studies in 2015, and I went on to do a master's again the following year, and it's at the same university too. And I think I could only do that because I could count on the support they give me, because I probably wouldn't have gone to do a master's if I feel I didn't have the support. But I was confident that they could give me the support. So So I completed my studies and I did a master's afterwards. And looking back now, I think I could join the dots now. I could say, I think this happened because of this, and this happened because of that. And I'm more than confident that God is always there. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Tommy. I love Tommy's story. I love that when Tommy found herself far away from home, God provided for her with a family that she could be part of. And that's God showing his love and care towards her, as he does towards Ruth. Ruth also has found herself in a culture that she's not familiar with. And like Tommy, she found refuge under the wings of God too. God reveals his love and care towards us through the people he puts around us. And he does the same in Ruth. The person that God puts in Ruth's way is Boaz. And it's through Boaz that God begins to reveal even more of his love, care, and compassion towards her and towards us. Boaz returns from Bethlehem, and he sees this woman in the fields, and he says to his overseer, "Who is she?" In his reply, the overseer basically says that she's a foreigner, she's poor, she's living with a shamed woman, Naomi, and she's simply making use of the provision allowed for such as herself under Israelite law. For any other landowner, this would have been enough. And they would have moved on. They got all the information they needed to know. But Boaz is different. He seems to understand that God's heart in making such a provision for the poor is one of care and concern. And those who follow him would do well to have the same care and concern. Boaz also happens to be a kinsman redeemer in the clan of Elimelech, which means that he is one that Naomi could have turned to ask for help to stop her losing her husband's land and possessions. And part of his role was to care for relatives in difficult circumstances. But we know that Naomi felt shamed within her community and she hadn't asked him for help. So as far as I can see, though Boaz can act in that role, he doesn't have to because Naomi hasn't asked him to. But he begins to do so anyway. He goes and he talks to Ruth. And as he talks to her, he tells her not to go and glean in any other field. In fact, he's really quite emphatic about it. He says the same thing 3 times in 2 sentences. Don't go and glean in any other field. Don't go away from here. Stay with the women who work for me. He also tells her that he's told the men not to lay a hand on her. And this is something that I've missed every time I've read Ruth. And I love Ruth, my namesake, but it's something I'd missed. Why is it important that he's told the men not to lay a hand on her? Well, we've seen that Ruth and Naomi are women who have no power, they have no privilege, and they have no one to protect them. Ruth is actually extremely vulnerable. In any other field, there's a high likelihood that the men would have taken advantage of her and sexually assaulted her. She wouldn't have been safe. And in fact, Naomi at the end of the chapter says to Ruth, yes, stay in Boaz's field, because in any other field you would be harmed. So Boaz is guaranteeing her protection and safety if she continues to glean in his field. Like the eaglet that seeks refuge under its mother's broad wings, so God's wings are spread over Ruth, protecting her. Not only that, but Boaz provides food and water for her during the day. He includes her with his workers at lunch, when if he hadn't been there, she'd have probably had to sit on the outside. She was a foreigner, she was from a different culture. And at the end of the day, she has more than enough barley to take home, because Boaz has basically told his overseer not to do his job properly. Don't rebuke her for picking up behind the harvesters, and actually drop a few extras that she doesn't really know about, but she can take anyway. In one afternoon, all of Ruth's practical needs, both physical in terms of food and water and emotional in terms of friendship, have been provided for. Again, how kind is Boaz? How kind is God? God led Ruth to Boaz's field, and it's in that field that Ruth finds protection and provision that she would not have found anywhere else. God cares about Ruth as a person, and he uses Boaz to display his love, care, and kindness in practical ways. Now, as Adrian said, and you can see, we're expecting a baby very, very soon. And we're really excited, slightly scared, but mostly really excited. And we found out that becoming a parent actually has quite a large price tag attached to it. Who knew that such a small person could require quite so many things? Being the practical person that I am, I was like, we are not going to buy anything that flashes or anything that makes a noise. The baby doesn't need it right now. We will just buy things so they can feed, be clothed, sleep, and have transport. That's it. I thought it was a good plan, and then I added it up. And we still couldn't really realistically afford everything that this child would need. Then God. God has provided for us and our child in ways we couldn't have imagined or dreamed of back in December when we found out we were expecting. To date, when our child arrives, they'll have somewhere comfortable to sleep, they'll have more clothes than they actually need, they'll be able to be transported, and there's a few more things besides. And the only things we've needed to buy are a new cot mattress and a set of curtains to partition one of our bedrooms. And God has provided it all through people. People who love us, people who don't even know us. And it has been absolutely amazing. So God has used people to practically provide for us, just as he practically provided for Boaz, for Ruth through Boaz. So are there people that you can think of who've done that for you, who in providing for your practical needs have actually displayed the love and kindness of God the Father to you? Because it is often through those people that we see the heart of God. But it's easy to miss because we think they're just being nice. But there's another way that God reveals his love, care, and kindness towards us through Boaz. And it's in the way he begins to restore honor to Ruth and Naomi. Boaz is a man of standing within the community. He enjoys a position of honor. He's wealthy. He has people working for him. And as Boaz talks to Ruth, this poor foreigner who's living with a woman under shame, he starts to transfer the honor he enjoys to them. He sends a loud message to his workers and overseers that Ruth is not to be treated as lesser than them, that she's equal to them, and they need to treat her as such. Ruth can't comprehend it. Why have I found such favour in your eyes that you notice me? She's on the fringes of society and she doesn't expect any more than what the law already provides for her. But Boaz, in his reply, says something quite remarkable. He says, I've been told about all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left father, mother, and homeland, and came to live with people you did not know before. Ruth's social status, her economic status, and her birthplace have no place in his reply. It doesn't matter to him. The fact that she loves Naomi, that she sacrificed herself for Naomi, and continues to do so, is what matters to him most. He looks beyond the surface of things to the heart. As Boaz removes the shame hanging over Ruth and Naomi by talking to her and calling out the gold in her, he reveals the father heart of God towards his people. God is a God who works to remove shame and restore honour to his people, including us. And this is exactly what I see in Jesus. Boaz points to Jesus, and Jesus reveals the Father. Jesus noticed those on the fringes of society, those who other people shunned and didn't want anything to do with. Jesus talked to them, he removed them shame, and he welcomed them in. So let me just tell you one story from Jesus' life. Jesus was going to a Pharisee's house for dinner. The Pharisee is a teacher of the law, quite high standing in the community. As Jesus is sitting eating dinner, a woman stands behind him weeping. And as the meal goes on, she begins to wet his feet with her tears and wipe them with her hair. Now that's quite important because Jesus was wearing sandals in a dusty environment. His feet needed washing quite regularly. She then anoints his feet with perfume. The Pharisee, whose house she's in, thinks she's a sinful woman. If Jesus knew what she was really like, he would tell her to get away from him. But Jesus tells him that he's wrong. Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not pour oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. The Pharisee only saw her sin and shame. He'd have condemned her and thrown her out. Jesus sees her heart, her great capacity for love, and that's what mattered to him, just as Ruth's character was what mattered to Boaz, not her outward circumstances. I told you earlier that Boaz was the guardian redeemer of the clan of Elimelech. That means that he could do what he did and restore honour to Ruth and Naomi and to get them out of their difficult circumstances. And as I've told you, Boaz points to Jesus. And Jesus is actually the ultimate guardian redeemer. Boaz's treatment of Ruth reveals a father's heart of love, compassion, and kindness. God has practically provided for Ruth and Naomi through Boaz. But more than that, he's begun to take them from a place of shame to a place of honour. And this is what Jesus does for us. Through Jesus, God is the one who removes our shame and disgrace and bestows honour on us. He restores us, makes us whole. I think that's what this chapter is really pointing to. God has used Ruth and Naomi's dire circumstances to put them in a position where he can provide for them. He's the one who ensures that Ruth ends up in Boaz's field. He's barely mentioned in this chapter. His name actually only comes up two or three times, and that's in the context of blessing. At no point when we read the chapter at the beginning did you hear God did this, God did that, God did the other. But he is clearly over the whole story. As we saw at the start, Boaz blesses Ruth and says, "May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've taken refuge." And I find the phrasing of that ironic because it's in the context of a blessing for the future. Yet Ruth has already started to find her refuge under the wings of God now, even though she wasn't aware of it. Boaz says, "Would God richly repay and reward you?" But we need to understand that's not a transactional thing. It's not repayment and reward for her faithfulness to Naomi. It's repayment and reward because she's chosen. In choosing to leave her country of birth, in choosing to go with Naomi, she's chosen to put herself under the wings of God. She's chosen to find her refuge in him. And God honours her for that. As his people, we've put ourselves under his wings, and therefore we find refuge. God could have provided for me and Peter, for Tommy, for Ruth and Naomi, in miraculous, supernatural, obvious ways that we couldn't attribute to anyone else but him. But for some reason, God often chooses to provide for us through circumstances that look ordinary and people we wouldn't expect. Like Ruth, we may not see God's hand in the moment. And sometimes it might take other people around us to help us see how he's working. But I can promise you that no matter what situation you find yourself in, God is always working for our good and his glory. And in restoring honor to Ruth and Naomi, Boaz points to Jesus. God is a father who longs to remove the shame and disgrace we so often feel we deserve to live under. But God has made a way for all our shame and disgrace to be removed once and for all. His love is deep and wide, and he sees beyond the surface of things. So we've got a choice. We can continue to live wondering where God is in our circumstances, or we can deliberately choose to realize that he's working in every single one of them, even if we don't see it right now, knowing we're safe and protected under his wings. If you don't know him and haven't experienced this love, grace, and compassion that I've been talking about this morning, then he's here. He's waiting to let you know that he sees behind the surface to the heart of things, that he loves you unconditionally, wants to meet you and remove your shame and restore you. There is refuge under the wings of God for all of us. Amen.
G'day.